accession number 26852, reel 3.
Mr. Coop, reel 3. Now, we were talking about your training, basic training.
Right.
Can I ask you if you had an assault course? I forgot to ask you on PT.
Yes. I wasn't very good at these assault courses, but I learned to cope with them in the end. Jumping over objects, crawling through pipes, doing neck rolls over windowsills. Oh, that's where the only time we ever used a bayonet. Bayonets on a bag as well. You pick a rifle up and charge, stick it in the bag and run on, putting the rifle down again.
Did they make it realistic in any way by having fire not directly down?
Not on basic training, not that I remember. You fired off in the ranges, of course, various positions, kneeling positions, prone positions, standing positions. And you fired volley fire, but...
What about tactical training? Did you get any practice at preparing...
Infiltration games, which were very nice games. You know, there would be a light somewhere in the moor, which was your target, and around that were big guards which you had to slip in and infiltrate and find your way through, which was quite interesting. So there was that sort of tactical games.
You enjoyed that?
It was a game, yes. It was good fun.
And what about sort of practicing making an attack as opposed to infiltrating?
I don't remember that.
Night attacks or
not? No, we did do some, but I don't remember much about them. I remember being taken to by lorry to a place miles away from the camp. And we were let loose and told to make our own way back. And it was expected we'd take about 2 days over that. We actually got back within 12 hours because we found the railway lines. And instead of getting lost on the moor and wondering where we were and thinking, we just followed the line and got back in no time at all. So they didn't like that. We're the difficult ones. I also remember the sergeant standing behind you and praying, saying, "You're the educated bugger, aren't you?" And the old ones, you know, they all came out.
Now, did you ever think, or did they ever think, that you were suitable material for a commission? Or were you aware of even the possibility that you could have taken a commission?
I was aware that there was a possibility I could have done. But I was never of the mind to apply.
Now, why not?
I don't know. I just didn't feel at that time that I wanted that. I think I also had a feel that I didn't like the people who were officers. They were strange, strainful people. And later on I began to realise that I was probably right when I played violin in officers' messes and saw what idiots they were.
Now, any other aspects of the training during the day? You know, these basic sessions.
Yes.
I've covered most things that I can.
I can't remember anything at the moment that I could add to that.
What about preparing for kit inspections? In other words, generally...
Oh my God, bullshit was everything. It was very, very demanding on time and effort. It got worse after training, strangely enough. But
so how would you prepare? I mean, tell us about how.
Oh my God! I mean,
your boots. How would you?
The boots were Blanco. People don't use that anymore.
Well, take the boots first.
The boots would have to be so clean, particularly the toe cap, that it was mirror-like. It was more polished than a mirror.
Then how do you get it in that state?
It was by making chota circles. That was you would actually sandpaper your boot top for a start. With sandpaper. And then with polish. And sometimes with a special kind of grease you might have made out of candle wax, you would start making very small circles with your finger on the surface of the boot and continuously do this hour after hour after hour after hour until the surface took on a shine. And it became quite an extraordinary thing to produce these boots because it was like glass. You could literally hold them up and see your face in them.
And would these be the ones you wore for your daily duties, or would you have a special pair you kept in this bulk?
Well, if you were wise, you'd keep a special pair. But that means you have to go and buy some, or steal some, or beg, borrow, or get them from somewhere else, because you wouldn't come in your kit. If you had to put your ordinary boots out, your daytime boots, they would never meet the standards.
Now what about?
Could I also say you polished the studs in the bottom of the boots? Or?
Just what I was going to ask. They actually went that far.
Oh, they went that far, yeah. And the ends of your boot laces with the little metal tags, they had to be polished.
Now, what you mentioned the blancoing. What was that? I mean, people don't understand that. They just don't.
Well, blanco was a kind of soap-like substance, which when dried, would dry like a chalk on your belt. And it was used to keep it clean. Supposedly to keep it clean.
What colour blanco were you? Because they're different in each
Well, they varied. I mean, if you were an MP, you would have a white belt. If you were a member of the North Stamford Regiment, you had a greenish khaki type belt. And this had to be late. You'd have to go out in the morning and find where the blanco table was, lay your belts and gaiters and things there, because the gaiters had to be polished and blancoed. Blanco came in a small soap-like container, and you had to mix it with water and scrub it onto your belt and let it dry. And it had to be done every day. And the belt, of course, also was held together with brasses. Brass buckles and brass hoops. They had to be polished with brasso. And they had to shine as your boot top did. And of course, all the buttons on your tunic. I don't think the young men know what a button... slide, or if you could slide this brass plate over your button and polish it without...
Button stick.
So that it didn't actually damage your uniform. But all those buttons had to shine. They would be coming, each one would be individually examined.
Now, would you have to lay it out all in a set way on your bed?
Or totally set out. First of all, the bedstead had to be clean. So you boot polished your bedstead. So it was black and clean and shiny. All over. Underneath, and later on, of course, when you're not doing bathing, you'd also have to fire underneath the bedstead in case you had some, what do they call them, bed bugs or something like that, which found their way on them. The mattress would be rolled up in a prescribed way, and on the top of that, the blankets would be properly folded in a prescribed way, then the sheets between the blankets popping out so they look like a little sandwich. And on top of that, depending upon the interior economy, I hate that word, but they called it interior economy, the cleanliness of the back room, would be laid out your boot laces, spare boot laces, spare button hooks, oh, and of course your housewife, which was a little cotton bag which contained the cotton needles and thimbles that you needed to repair your equipment with. And sometimes your kit bag will be folded in such a way that a white portion would be showing under which you had boot polished your name. Now, on top of that would go your tin hat.
Did you see the point of this level of...
No. But I find it quite useful now when I try to keep my own bedroom tidy.
And you went along with it at the time?
Well, you had to. What else could you do? You would spend a long time in the guardhouse if you didn't.
Did some people rebel in your group? I mean, were they all regulars, or most of them would be National Servicemen?
National Servicemen. There's no question of people not doing as they were told. The only one that did was an Irishman who joined up, and after the first leave he deserted. He'd gone back to Southern Ireland. Nice lad, had good common sense.
What did you think of him having gone?
Well, I didn't know much about Ireland at the time. So I was surprised at the comments about Irish people being traitors or The idea that they left the lights on during the war so they could drive the German bombers over, the bastards, you know. This kind of conversation went on after he'd gone. So I learned a bit about the Irish situation only through that kind of experience. And I quite liked the lad. He was Flanagan. He had I hope he thrived.
He was never caught?
Never caught, no. Not like some of the guys that deserted when they were in Korea. That's a different story.
So anything else about your typical day, or we haven't covered?
I think we've covered most of it there.
Were you allowed out in the evening at all in your basic training into Lichfield?
Towards the end, some of us were allowed at weekends, but we would all end up at the cinema somewhere or in a pub. Buses weren't very regular, so you had to walk in. Tamworth, of course, was a good way off too.
Did you go to Lichfield or Tamworth or both? Or
went to both from time to time.
And would you drink much? Or, you know, I mean.
Well, at that time I'd never been a drinker, but I certainly learned to drink pretty quickly. The lads taught me how to take beer. I never really sort of done that before.
How were you seen as young recruits in Lichfield and Tamworth? I mean, that all.
I don't know at all. I can't answer that at all. I think they were a bloody nuisance from time to time because we got into fights.
Who with?
Local people who were protesting. They would sometimes take the mic. And if we had too much beer in us, it happened.
Were you ever involved in such a fight? Or
once.
What do you remember of that time?
Waking up. Somebody hit me.
Hard enough to knock you out.
Oh, yes. I don't know what it was about. It was in one of the Lichfield pubs, and I got stuck in with the rest of them, and somebody from behind hit me with an object, and bang, that was it. I was finished.
Now, anything else before we leave there? I think that's pretty well covered.
Yeah, I think
so. Were you assessed at the end of it at all as to which branch, or you knew where you
were? Well, I knew where I was going, and of course, they took. So they took the mick out of you because you're going to be a musician. You can't be a soldier. You'll never be any bloody good. You know, whatever. As it happened, we were in dead trouble because we weren't bandsmen in the. We were infantrymen who played played an instrument and treated as bandsmen. But I gathered the CO wanted this huge band on parade, so he was breaking the rules. So the military band should only be about 250. We put an enormous amount of. Including the core drums.
Now, where were you sent?
I was asked to join the military band, the North Staffordshire Regiment, in Trieste.
That was the 1st Battalion?
The 1st Battalion,
so
yeah.
You went straight there out from Lichfield?
That's right.
And that would be, it looks to me as if it was August, actually, September.
Yes,
very early September.
That sounds right.
It says Bedford, is that one?
British Element Trieste Force. Bedford, yeah. People forget that we're having troubles with the Yugoslavia, White Russia, whatever it was then.
Now, what do you remember of we might as well cover the trip out, for any preparations and then the trip out. The
trip out was by boat from Harwich to the Hook of Holland, and from the Hook of Holland to Triestissimo, Villach in Austria. And I particularly remember waking up in one of the railway sidings, and I can't remember which German city it was, but it was one of those that had been totally devastated by our bombing, and looking out of the window at this devastation of a city that had once stood proudly there, and that was horrifying. It was my first, I'd learned about the blitzes of Exeter and Coventry and things like that, but this was devastation beyond belief. And then we ended up at Villach in Austria. Got our pictures in the Daily Mirror because we were cleaning snow off the roof of one of the hotels we were staying at for a very short period. And then a journey by bus from there through Triestissimo to Trieste itself. First time I had coffee with cream on top was wonderful.
What were your first impressions of Trieste? The town, the situation, everything?
The warmth, the sunlight, the blueness of the water, the cleanliness of the streets, the gentleness of the people, the civilization that I had missed so much for the last period of my life, I suppose. We were quartered in an old leper colony that name is eluding me. It was just outside Trieste.
Can you describe, was it just billets?
No, it was actually purpose-built.
For the barracks, but for lepers?
Yeah.
Can you describe it, you know?
Well, it was in grounds of its own, surrounded by a wall that was defensible for... It had been accommodated by the army for some time. Lazaretto barracks, it was called Lazaretto, obviously. There were large buildings that had once been hotels or something like that, I should imagine, that kind of facility. And we were quartered in, not in barracks, but in rooms. So it was very civilized compared with what we had been used to before.
Single rooms?
Some single rooms for one or two people, but most rooms were for three or four people at a time. Never two. Because the army had that funny feeling that two people sleeping in the same room were homosexual. Well, it was never voiced, but it was tacitly understood that didn't happen. There was a superb band practice room.
Now, tell me about... So you were joining the band there. Mm. Now, tell me about the setup of the band. You started briefly, but what was the band setup? You know, how many instruments, what was it?
It was a full military band with woodwind... clarinets, that is, E-flat clarinets, B-flat clarinets, piccolos, flutes, trombones of bass and tenor, E-flat, B-flat basses, euphoniums, the whole thing you'd expect to find in a military band.
And about how many?
On parade, about 40 on average, with some still left over.
How were you taken into the band and sort of trained up?
We were expected to go straight in and do it. We had to learn different drills than we'd been learning because we were a parade band, but we were also a concert band. And we had a small jazz group, which was very efficient, beautifully.
Now, what instruments were you playing in? When they did the parade?
Bassoon, clarinet, and violin. I was not a very good bassoonist. I could just about pop a note here and there in the F scale.
So when you were on parade, you'd be on the clarinet?
Yes.
And that you weren't trained in that?
No,
I
mean...
You already knew it?
I already knew it.
Could you tell us what a typical band rehearsal was like?
It was typical in the sense that people would be required to be there on time. There was the freedom to find your own way there most of the time, to the band rehearsal room, which was fixed time every morning you'd start. There'd be a program of what you were going to rehearse. There'd be the tuning of the instruments, of course. Probably one of the two band sergeants would take the early parts of the rehearsal. And then we'd move out to drill. And... military band drill is rather like guards. It's not shoulder to shoulder. So keeping your distance and keeping your rows straight and as well as playing was quite difficult and demanding. And although later on I learned to appreciate the Americans and to see that they did superbly timed stuff, on the whole we were much better at it than general drilling. Then there was the concert work, which of course was...
Now, tell me about that.
Very demanding.
Was it specially rehearsed for, or was it...
Oh, specially rehearsed, yes.
Now, what was the composition of a concert band?
Same. Exactly the same.
Oh, it was just a military band?
Just a military band. But
it'd be a different program then, would it?
Or it could be, yes, because depending what we were doing, we'd play for different functions.
Tell me what a typical concert would be like.
Well, there'd be an overture, which they would rehearse as any professional would be. There'd be light music, soupe, Strauss, some of the Souther marches, that kind of thing. But I was more interested in the small light orchestra that they were developing and had developed, which required strings, violins, second violins, viola, cello, clarinet, flute, piano. And that was, at that time, very demanding. And for some while, I don't think I was really quite up to the standard they wanted to, because it was, you had to sight read and sight read fast.
Now this was for light concerts, meaning it was what, a classical program?
Not necessarily, because one of the things we did was to fill in for a nightclub in Trieste, because they were short of musicians down there, so they made an arrangement with Mercury, and we went down there and played for them, which was really quite amusing, because it was the first time I ever saw a strip act. We were playing, my memory's terrible, but it was, Tripek. From Nutcracker Street. There we are. And I'm playing with my back to the screen. And slowly, like Haydn's Farewell Symphony, each one of the instruments was dropping out. And I saw, until in the end, it was just me and the piano. The clarinet had dropped out and he's gone goggle-eyed. The trombonist was just about drooling over a drum kit. And I stopped playing and looked around, and there's this girl grinning all over her face, doing a dance and stripping off at the same time. We hadn't realized we were doing that. So it was my first introduction to nightlife in Trieste was quite interesting.
And would they play in, would the orchestra play the orchestra? Would it be called the orchestra?
Yes.
Would that play in the officer's mess as well?
Oh, yes. Yes. Which was very formal occasions. And
tell us about them.
Well, you'd have to pay them formally into dinner. I've forgotten what it was. There's one particular piece which is always played as people walk into their meal on formal occasions. During the meal, we play light music. Sometimes brass would have to play a salute of fanfare for whatever was going on, or requests. It was entertainment. And part of the formalities of the mess.
Is this when you saw them behaving badly? Or
no, that came later. They were pretty well formal in Europe.
Now tell me about so you've got the military band, you've got the light orchestra,
yes,
and you've got the jazz band.
That's right.
Now were you in the jazz band?
No, but I did play for them occasionally.
Tell me about the jazz band. Well, how was that set up?
Well, it was a typical jazz setup. Was trombone, trumpet, clarinet, piano and drums.
So you were clarinet when you played?
Yeah. Occasionally I did a Stefan Grappelli sort of thing with a fiddle. But not very good. My colleague Jack Long was much better than I was. So I would never have told him that at the time.
Where would the jazz band perform?
Well, they used to play them for things like the governor of Hong Kong, or later on, when we were out there, the governor of Hong Kong's birthday party or whatever it was. And sometimes we played in Trieste for various military dues that were going on there, entertainment.
It's just instead of the orchestra, you have the jazz.
That's right, or sometimes both together. Yeah.
And were the jazz band or the orchestra paid?
No, strangely enough, when we went to Korea, which comes much later, we were the only group that could move around because of the winter.
I'll come back to this, because we're obviously going to come on to this later. But not in... But
that's when we got paid in whiskey.
But you didn't get paid in Trieste.
No.
So what was your typical day like there? I don't mean to go through the whole routine again, but I mean, what were you, how much a soldier were you? How much?
We stopped being a soldier. Just occasionally, we were required to go back to our soldierly duties.
So what would a typical day be like for the orchestra?
Get up, personal practice. Long periods of scales, arpeggios, whatever you were doing.
So you had personal practice?
You've got to practice.
Where would you do that?
In your back room. Pick up your fiddle and start playing your scales. And scales and arpeggios and exercises were required.
Did that not cause unrest?
Oh, there was a hell of a noise. It was a hell of a noise.
But so it was literally hours.
Hours and hours of practice.
Did that improve you?
Yes. But what particularly improved me was going down to Trieste one evening and walking into the Naffy with my friends, four violinists, stopped dead in our tracks by the sound of somebody playing a violin. Brilliantly, magnificently. Can't say I've ever heard it played like that, ever. And the man was called Ludovico Dobrani. And he had been leader of the Zagreb State Orchestra. But this was the time when White Russia and the other place changed its boundaries. And he'd become a displaced person. He was living in a displaced, we don't hear of it now, do we? Displaced persons camp in Trieste. And trying to earn his living by playing for half a crown a night in the Naffy or the YMCA. And he was an extraordinary man. And we eventually ended up having him as our teacher. I mean, I've never heard things like the Moto Perpetua by Paganini played so extraordinary.
He was a virtuoso.
He was a virtuoso violinist of exceptional caliber. And a man of great integrity.
Was he a good teacher? I mean, did he say he improved you? I mean, did he really?
He was yes, because he introduced me things about the instrument I never even thought of or knew. And different ways of he extended my understanding, my attitude, and my actions. Not only by his teaching, but by his example. He changed the way I held the instrument. He changed the way I looked at the instrument. He changed the way I thought about the action of the bow and the strings.
So it sounds like he took you right back to basics.
Right back to basics, yes. Brilliant man. Wonderful teacher. When we left, we lost contact, and I often wonder what happened.
Did you play with him? I mean, it must have been a thrill for you to try.
Oh, yes. And the bandmaster rearranged the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto for the military band to accompany him playing it. It didn't work, but it was nice to see it tried. But people forget that there was a lot of talent in those young men, which was totally unrecognized. There was a clarinet player there called Gorsden. I remember him. I didn't get on with him, but I admired his playing. There was a guy who had come out of Borstal, and he was playing the E-flat clarinet and a piccolo, would you believe it? But he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant technician. And a lad called Harris, who was the timpanist. His father, I think, had been a professional timpanist in one of the opera Sadler's Wells or something like that. Not just competent, talented. So it was an extraordinary get-up. And when you got young men like that together, there was a comradeship and a feeling of well-being which you can't describe easily.